Welcome to the Stem Cell Report. I'm Martin Pera, the editor-in-chief of Stem Cell Reports, the open-access journal of the International Society for Stem Cell Research. In this monthly podcast, we look at highlights from the latest advances in stem cell research appearing in the journal. We'll be speaking to authors to explore the questions that led to new breakthroughs and learn how they tackled those questions. We'll hear about the background to novel findings, the challenges ahead, and we'll get to know a little bit about the people behind the work. Thanks for listening in. This episode of the Stem Cell Report will explore the current state of research into interspecies chimeras, organisms consisting of cells from at least two different species. The images and stories of ancient cultures dramatize chimeras. In Greek mythology, the chimera was a frightening female creature, part lion, part snake, and part goat, wreaking havoc and devouring cattle. She was finally slain by Bellerophon astride Pegasus. In modern times, though, chimeras have proven to be invaluable model systems that have advanced our understanding of developmental biology and evolution and are contributing to basic and applied research in regenerative biology and medicine. Research on chimeras has been active since the 1960s, beginning with quail chick chimeras, but recently scientific advances in chimera research have been facilitated by the discovery of pluripotent stem cells and new genetic editing techniques. Specifically, these tools have led to improvements in the specificity and extent of chimeric contribution in host animals. In the process known as blastocyst complementation, pluripotent cells from one species are injected into the blastocyst of another, carrying cell-type-specific disabling genetic mutations. The result is the ablation of a particular host organ, such as a pancreas, and its replacement by stem cell-derived donor tissue. This methodology has facilitated the development of many interspecies tissues and organs in mice and pigs. Our guests, a group of young next-gen scientists, have established themselves as leaders in the development and application of this approach. So I'm pleased today to be joined by Drs. Ori Bar-Nur and Jun Wu, along with Joel Zwick. Ori is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Sciences and Technology, and he leads the Regenerative and Movement Biology Lab at ETH Zurich in Switzerland. Joel Zwick is a senior graduate student in the Bar-Nur Laboratory and the first author of a recent paper from that lab in Stem Cell Reports on Interspecies Chimerism, titled Exclusive Generation of Rat Spermatozoa in Sterile Mice Using Blastocyst Complementation with Pluripotent Stem Cells. Dr. Jun Wu is a Virginia Murchison Linthicum Scholar in Medical Research and an assistant professor in the Department of Molecular Biology at the University of Texas Southwestern. Jun was a postdoctoral fellow in my lab at USC before joining Juan Carlos Pizua Belmonte at the Salk. Jun is also a New York Stem Cell Foundation Robertson Fellow. Thank you all for joining us. Ori, before we jump into a discussion on interspecies chimeras, I wanted to learn a little bit about your lab. You lead a lab that's interested in developing stem cell approaches to treat degenerative muscle loss in humans, but you also carry out research in cellular agriculture, which we'll talk more about later. Tell us a little bit about your current program.
With pleasure, and many thanks for the invitation to the podcast. So towards the end of my postdoc in the Hochlinger lab, we reported a stem cell reports paper in 2018 on a method to reprogram mouse fibroblasts into induced myogenic progenitor cells and fibers. And we could extensively propagate these cells, and they also showed that we can engraft them in vivo into skeletal muscles of mice. So with this system, I joined ETH with the purpose of learning better how do fibroblasts convert into muscle fiber, into myogenic progenitors and fibers, and what is the applicability of this system to treat muscle diseases such as Duchenne in rodent models. Regarding cellular agriculture, because meat is composed primarily of muscle fibers, this system turned out to be quite attractive also for the emerging cultivated meat space, because we were approached by several foundations asking if we can try to replicate this system also with large animals, such as cows and pigs, to produce muscle stem cells and fibers for cultivated meat production.
Terrific. An interesting application of stem cell biology. We'll talk more about it later. So, Jun, your laboratory at UT Southwestern also has multiple interests. You use chimeras and stem cell models to understand mammalian development and to develop potential regenerative therapies. Tell us more about your work, Jim.
Yes, Martin. First, I'd like to thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to participate. My lab, UT Southwestern, is mainly focused on using propolean stem cells model for basic and translational studies. And there is two major directions, research directions in my lab. One of them is use propolean stem cell to generate interspecies chimeras to study differences and also conservation between species during early development. And with the ultimate goal is to generate human tissue and organs in animal host such as a pig. The other main direction of my lab is to use propolean stem cells to generate stem cell embryo models. For example, the blastocyst-like structures that we reported last year on human using human naive propolean stem cells. So we are also starting to explore the merging these two directions using stem cells to generate chimeric embryo models. Hopefully that we can talk about in more detail in a later conversation. Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah, it's an exciting program. So Joel, it's fair to say your career is still unfolding, but tell us about your background and how you arrived at the Barnard Laboratory.
Hi, Martin. And also from my side, thank you for having me on today. So I did my bachelor's and master's here at ETH, and I majored in medical technologies. I did internships in the UK and Japan, which I then followed up with a master's thesis on role of TRP channels in inflammation and degeneration of human intervertebrate discs. After my studies, I then worked as a research assistant on a project about ex vivo liver regeneration. And already then, I had quite some interest in regenerative medicine and also physiology. It was during this time I was also looking for PhD opportunities, and I think it was one of the few times where reading a newsletter actually paid off for me is when I saw Ori will be joining ETH. And I looked into his research, found it to be very interesting, reached out to him, and here I am, nearing the end of my PhD studies.
Terrific. Did you find doing some time as a kind of a research assistant in a lab before your PhD, was that helpful to you?
Yes, I think it was. It helped me to kind of clear my head, also find a bit my direction in which I would like to go, instead of coming fresh off the studies and heading straight on, gave me time to reflect.
Good. So, June, I think our listeners kind of will know what chimeras are, but they may not be fully aware of their applications. Can you give us a bit of a broad perspective on the scientific application of chimeras? What can we learn about fundamental biology, and what are some of the potential applications for human health? And additionally, with blastocyst complementation, how close are we to using this technique to develop organs for transplantation?
Sure. So chimeras actually has been used for several decades, and even more than that. And in the past, researchers have generated intraspecies chimeras, basically using stem cells, propolean stem cell from the same species, and inject them into early embryo. Through those studies, transgenic animal models, such as models for human diseases, can be created through germline transformation and chimera formation. In addition, chimeras are very useful for study gene function during early development to study a particular gene, how it's involved in different tissue organ formation. But in the context of interspecies chimeras, they introduce additional applications. For example, I mentioned about using interspecies chimeras to study conserved and divergent developmental program during development, as well as to study species-specific features, for example, how a certain species can acquire or certain features, such as the cancer resistance, cold resistance. Is this intrinsic to the genome, or is it established during the developmental program? I'll give you an example. For the rat doesn't have a gallbladder, but the mouse has a gallbladder. So when we inject the propolean stem cell from the rat inside the mouse embryo, we were very surprised to find that the red cell can actually contribute to the gallbladder development, suggesting that this the ability to generate a gallbladder is not because the red cannot do it, but because of the microenvironment during early development in the red is not permissive to generate gallbladder tissue. But more importantly, using interspecies chimeras, there is the hope to generate human tissues and organs using animal as a whole, such as a pig. but we're still far from there yet. So in order to generate human tissues and organs in animals, there's a technique called an interspecies blastocyst complementation. So the concept is very simple. Instead of using wild-type host embryos, it can use a mutant host embryos that are deficient in the genes that are particular for organ development, such as pancreas. If you knock out the PDX1 gene in the host embryos, the host will not generate the pancreas, but we hope that the unmodified, the donor cell from the human can complement the defect of the host and give rise to the human organs tissues in animals. But as I said, we're not there yet. There's still a long way to go before we can generate fully functional human organs in animals.
Sure. I mean, it is kind of a classic technique used by people like Anne McLaren and others, but with today's tools, one can envision so much more. It's a bright future. Ori, the recent paper that you and Joel published uses chimeras to generate rat spermatozoa in mice. Now, you talked about your research program earlier, and on the surface, this particular study seems to be a little bit unrelated to the work going on in your lab. So I wondered how you started this project and what you hope to achieve going forward.
Yeah, so during my final year as a postdoc in the Hochschule lab, I was debating with myself which research directions I would like to explore independently in my future lab. And I knew that several objectives would be related to the direct lineage conversion into muscle that we reported. But I was also keen on still exploring things related to pluripotency and iPSCs and ESCs, and in particular, chimerism and blastocyst complementation because of a work that was published a few years before that tweaked my imagination from the Nakauchi lab about production of a xenogeneic pancreas. And around that time, Jun Wu and Villamonte published another seminal work, and there was another one also from the Nakauchi lab showing, again, the feasibility of this approach and even taking it one step further into showing that human pluripotent cells can contribute to pig embryos. So back then, I wondered whether we can also utilize blastocyst complementation for germ cell production to exclusively produce germ cells of one species and another. And the primary driver is for species conservation efforts, whether we can then generate germ cells of endangered species using induced pluripotent stem cells and blastocyst complementation. And this was the main driver and things that we would like to explore in the future. We'd like to take it. We showed a proof of principle with UL's work with a mouse and a rat. But we would like to show it for more endangered species. And maybe just as an example, recently a Bramble K. Malomi rat became extinct in Australia. It's the first reported extinction due to man-made climate change. And I sincerely wish we had fibroblasts from this special rodent such that we could have trialed induced pluripotent stem cell production and maybe even germline cell production.
Well, maybe you should talk to some of my colleagues down in Australia. Perhaps someone can help you out. If you want to work on snow leopards, I'd be very pleased to see you do that. Joel, tell us.
I think chimerism with a mouse would be challenging.
No doubt. Joel, tell us about your paper and what you actually found.
So we first started out with a mouse model, which carries a knockout in the X-linked TSC2/D3 gene. And this knockout leads to a disruption in meiosis I during spermatogenesis, which means that all of the non-complemented males are sterile. In 2016, Koenig et al. Showed exclusive donor germline transmission using these animals. And we thought this could be a good model for a research question to generate rat sperm inside these sterile mice via blastocyst complementation. So to first confirm these previous results, we injected mouse ESCs into this blastocyst and got fertile male chimeras. However, since for most species, ESCs are not available, we also wanted to know if this works with mouse iPSCs, and we also successfully got fertile male chimeras. This finding was somewhat novel, but not entirely unexpected. And same with the ESCs, all of the chimeras' offspring were donor cell derived. Then for us, the next logical step was to try and inject rat ESCs into these blastocysts. And while we did have some experience with generating mouse chimeras, we had no prior experience with interspecies chimerism. So definitely, we were all very excited when we got the first mouse rat chimera from these rat ESC injections. And I think we were even more excited when we euthanized this animal, the first chimera, saw larger testes, and more importantly, also saw rat sperm. So this was quite the excitement in the lab. And this obviously then also led us to characterize the sperm and the testes for the restoration of spermatogenesis. So for the testes, we used Western blot and IF, but also single-cell RNA-seq of testicular cells. As you can imagine, in these chimeric testes, the rat and the mouse cells are mixed. So we had to generate the custom chimeric genome, which can differentiate between the two species transcripts. We then analyzed the data, and what stuck out the most was the fact that all cells post-meiosis I, so where the TSC223 mutation affects spermatogenesis, were derived from the donor rat ESCs. This was also reflected in the pseudotime plot, where we observed a nice progression from spermatocytes all the way to elongated spermatids. Of course, we also then wanted to see, can we generate rats or at least some early stage embryos? And for this, we first had to establish rat ICSI, where we fertilized the oocytes manually in vitro, and this resulted in live birth from wild-type sperm. We then tried to replicate this with a chimera-derived frozen thawed sperm and got all the way to blastocysts in vitro. However, when we then performed embryo transfer and of the fertilized oocytes into foster mothers, we got implantation sites in the uterus, but unfortunately, we did not get any live rats out of this.
So we'll talk about that in a moment, but can I compliment you? You really, it's a very impressive technical achievement. There are a lot of barriers you had to cross to get to where you did. The production of rat sperm from mouse testis was impressive, but as we just heard in the fertilization experiments, the chimeric sperm could make embryos and even blastocysts, but no living rats. So why do you think that is?
So this is a very important question, and I would first like to say that we do not have a definitive, clear answer yet, but we have assumptions. And maybe before I address some of our assumption, I would like to briefly mention other works in the field that reported on xenogeneic germ cell production. So there are a few reports dating even two decades ago that showed that if you transplant spermatogonial stem cells of rats into mice, they can produce sperm, but even then the sperm was not completely, the xenogeneic environment was not perfect for production of completely healthy sperm. And again, it was shown by Hirabayashi that you need actually ICSI to produce live rats from this xenogeneic germ cells. And in a more recent work published by Kobayashi and colleagues, they did the inverse of what we did in our work, where they generated using blastocyst complementation solely mouse germ cells in rats. And even in their work, they had to they only used round spermatids to produce live mice from the germ cells that were produced in rats, again suggesting that more differentiated spermatozoa or elongated spermatids might be negatively affected in a xenogeneic environment. And I believe this is what we're also seeing in our work, that we generated spermatozoa, but it could be that many of these cells are not completely healthy. And some of the assumption or our current thoughts is that developmental timing of rat sperm cells is 1.5 longer than mouse. So it could be that they needed more time. They didn't fully mature in a mouse sterile environment. Some other thoughts we have is that hormonal levels could be different between a mouse and a rat testes, and that even the support cells, the Sertoli cells, were of mouse origin. So they might have not fully matured the rat germ cells into spermatozoa. But saying that, I would like to mention that other works have shown production of live animals, whether it's the Izotani or Kobayashi and colleagues have shown recently that they can produce animals. It could be that with a few more trials or going to more an earlier round spermatid, we would be able to generate live animals from these cells.
Well, there are plenty of good ideas there to keep you busy for a while. We're going to take a quick break now, and when we return, we'll continue our discussion.
The International Society for Stem Cell Research is a global scientific society that promotes excellence in stem cell science and applications to human health. Our vision is a world where stem cell science is encouraged, ethics are prioritized, and discovery improves understanding and advances human health. To join us, visit www.isscr.org/membership.
Welcome back to the Stem Cell Report. We've been talking with Ori Barner, Jun Wu, and Joel Zwick about the development and study of interspecies chimeras. Jun, I wanted to follow up on Ori's comments before the break, and specifically the inability to generate live rats from the interspecies-generated sperm. Can you talk some about the developmental species barriers to chimerism, like those encountered by Ori, what we know about them, and what's being done to manipulate them? I know you've done some really interesting work in this area.
Yes, so species differ during development. I believe that interspecies barrier happens in different tissues at different stages of development. My lab is mainly focused on the very early embryo development before the gastrulation. So we use proponent stem cells from different species and co-culture them together in the dish to study their crosstalk interactions. By doing that, we identify several barriers. One of them is cell-cell competition. We realize that when grow proponent stem cells from different species together, some species will become dominant and become the winner cells and outcompete the other species, particularly between in the context of human and mouse proponent stem cells. When we culture them in the dish, human cells will be eliminated after a few days during co-culture. And we identify this barrier specifically happening during this peri-gastrulation developmental stages, because when we use proponent stem cell from an earlier time point, such as the naive proponent stem cell, we didn't observe such competition. In addition to cell competition, we also realized that there is a differential cell-cell adhesion between species. Even though we grow human and mouse cells in the exactly same culture condition in the same proponent state, so they seem to grow separately from each other. As already mentioned, there are other barriers out there. For example, the developmental time is different between different species. Specifically between human and mouse, there is a dramatic differences in gestation period and also in the time they needed to grow. So we believe that developmental time is also one of the barriers. And that contributed, these barriers contributed to the low level of chimeric contribution from a donor species that are evolutionarily distant from the host species. Even between close related species, such as rat and mice, there are still barriers that we don't fully understand. When we use mouse proponent stem cells instead of the rat proponent stem cell, we see much higher chimerism in the host embryos. And even we can use mouse proponent stem cells to generate the entire mouse through tetraploid complementation. But with rat, we oftentimes see that if the chimeric contribution level is high, they will lead to embryonic lethal very early on. So that suggests that there is incompatibility between these two species during early development.
Thanks. That's a whole host of issues to overcome, but it's great. We learned some interesting biology along the way, which is good. So Jun, following on with you, another topic. Any discussion about chimeras would be incomplete without some discussion around the ethics of the approach. So Ori and Joel's paper, like others before it, used mouse and rat cells. But there are many applications where human animal chimeras, those in which human cells are put into animal embryos, are potentially useful. For obvious reasons, these experiments, though, also merit special ethical oversight. And I can't help but mention that just recently, Jakob Hanna and Magda Zernicka-Goetz published experiments describing extensive post-implantation development of mouse embryos in vitro, embryos that were solely derived from cultured stem cells proceeding right up to the stage of organogenesis. Do you see human-animal in vitro chimeras formed in this fashion as a potentially important tool for basic research in regenerative medicine? And do you envision difficult discussions around the ethics of such research?
Absolutely. I think ethical consideration is an important part of the chimeric studies, especially involving the use of human proponent stem cells. In contrast to what already reported, actually using human pluripotent stem cells, one of the major concern is to the contribution to the germline. So actually, you use human animal chimera, we try to prevent that from happening. The other major ethical concern is the brain contribution to human cells. So obviously, it will be different if you use human pluripotent stem cell as a donor cells rather than rat. But back to your question, I think the both studies recently reported by McDaniel, Zernica Goltz, and Jacob Hanna is milestone studies in the stem cell field. I believe this pushed the boundary of using stem cell derived embryo model, how far we can go in vitro to generate embryo-like entities and structures. As I mentioned, start from this podcast, my lab is very interested in using the similar techniques to mix human cells together with cells from mice, for example, to generate chimeric embryo models, to study using this in vitro chimeric model to study the differences between human and animals. And hopefully we can use them to understand the species barrier better and to develop strategies to overcome these barriers. Yes, absolutely. I think these will be important research directions, but also since this direction is very new, we need a lot of discussion on the ethics regarding using this animal models. Embryo models.
Thanks, June. I totally agree with you there. Now, I'll go a little off script here and ask you another question. One of the things that interests me is if you put human cells into one of these embryo models, do you think that the cells you got out at the end, if you were trying to make some differentiated cell, would be in some way better in that being made in that embryonic environment than they would just being grown 2D on their own in a dish through normal differentiation pathways?
I will predict that they'll be better because they has the cell-cell communication from actual embryonic tissues from other species or from the embryonic tissues from the other species. And also putting the human cell in this context, it created a more physiological, more developmental relevant environment for the human cells to differentiate. But since we're using animal cells, or mouse cells and pig cells as a source of cells to creating this model. So there are still species barriers that are preventing from human cells from properly differentiating this context. But as you know, there's other labs that are interested in purely using human stem cell derived models to generate this human embryo-like entities post implantation. I think that will be equally exciting direction to follow.
I was hoping you'd go in that direction. I tend to agree with you. I think developing in a normal 3D environment may indeed be helpful, but we don't really have the answer to that yet, I think.
Yeah.
Ori, so this is, I'm going to return to something we discussed earlier, which is a little off topic of the paper today, but you mentioned your lab is looking into cellular agriculture. And this seems to be a rapidly growing area of stem cell research with important practical applications. In fact, the ISSCR not too long ago had a digital series on this topic. Can you tell us a little more about this field and what your lab is doing?
With pleasure. And indeed, this is an emerging field with it has a potential to be really disruptive technology and that is in dire need given the worldwide human population growth, which contributes to global warming in part due to the release of greenhouse gases from large animals such as cows, which are being used as the source of meat. So in respect to cultivated meat, to generate meat in vitro, we require muscle stem cells that can then be converted into muscle fibers, which are the main primary building block of meat. And conventionally, most labs are using satellite cell-derived myoblasts. And in fact, myoblasts were used by Mark Paus back in 2013 when he reported to the world the first cultivated meat bird. However, it is also widely accepted that myoblasts at a certain time stop proliferating and stop lose some of their differentiation propensity. And this is a problem if you would like to generate a biomass for cultivated meat production. So as I mentioned earlier, in 2018, we reported on a highly expandable mouse myogenic progenitor system And when I started my lab, we were approached by the Good Food Institute Foundation with a purpose to collaborate and try to replicate the system with large animal cells for cultivated meat production. And since then, we've done quite an extensive work, which I hope to report via publication in the future, on enhanced media and culture conditions to both promote bovine cell proliferation and differentiation into muscle fibers. And maybe one final important note, I strongly believe that regenerative medicine and cellular agriculture share some common denominators and goals. For example, both aim to grow cells in a cost-effective and ideally animal serum-free conditions, either for transplantation or for consumption. And I believe that the extensive effort that is currently being done by the cultivated meat startup may even benefit regenerative medicine purposes to grow various stem cells in vitro for potential cell-based therapy.
I think that's a really important point, that the technological developments that will bring cost of goods down, that is just so important to the whole regenerative medicine field, because that's going to be such a barrier to making sure this technology is available to everyone, because the costs now are just incredible. Joel, we don't want to forget about you. You're coming to the end of your graduate training. What's next?
So definitely like to stay in research, but whether this will be in the form of pursuing a postdoc in academia or move into industry, I am open to both. But at the moment, I am more leaning towards industry. Now, I do see my future going either towards cellular agriculture, might be a bit biased from my lab here, or into organoid research. But also, since nothing is ultimately decided yet, I'll also do a bit of self-promotion, and by saying I'm, of course, open to network and people can feel free to reach out to me.
Well, we have a small but sizable audience, so hopefully someone out there will get in touch. I'm sure you won't have any problem finding a great post. But as you're thinking about your next steps and what's ahead, what are some things you learned from working in the Barnard lab?
Yeah, first of all, I am, of course, thankful to Ori for having given me this great opportunity to work on this project, and also especially the liberty to come up with my own ideas and approaches on how to tackle the whole project. Especially since our lab had no prior expertise in this regard with interspecies chimerism, with the germline, the testes. I had to learn quite a bit and a steep learning curve. And obviously, research rarely follows a smooth and straight trajectory. So I also did need quite a bit of perseverance and curiosity in order to come up with solutions to some of the challenges I faced. So I think these two things are definitely some of the key takeaways for me. And of course, what I also learned to value during my PhD, I think more than ever, is that a great team with a good spirit, as we have here, can also have a huge positive impact on morale and motivation.
Terrific. I really like to hear when talented young people are given a lot of responsibility. I think that's a terrific thing. So, Ori, I'm going to ask you a similar question, but more from a mentor's perspective. You train in some great laboratories. There's some Benvenisti in Israel and Conrad Hockendlinger in the States. Very well known for their attention to detail and creativity. What did you take away from those labs yourself that you really think are important to pass on to the next generation, like Joel?
So many things, and maybe some would even resonate some of the things that Yoel said. So I was fortunate to have two wonderful mentors during my PhD and postdoc. And in respect to Conrad, he really gives his trainees both the freedom and safe space to explore new research directions that are not always related to the main research themes of his lab. And this really enables mentees to venture into new research directions and research arenas. And during this journey, discover sometimes unexpected things. And I still find it quite remarkable that he supported my exploration, my venture into the skeletal muscle progenitors system that we observed, because his lab didn't do back then skeletal muscle biology. And from Nisim, I observed his really unique scientific creativity and learning how to ask the most interesting and relevant question and how to build it into a scientific story. And Nisim is also a wonderful teacher, and I will never forget listening to his lectures as a young undergraduate student about myodine transdifferentiation and embryonic stem cells and chimerism and pluripotency, which, as it turned out, evolved to be the cornerstones of my current research interests.
Terrific. Well, Nisim is well known. He's legendary for the quality of students, he turns out, and obviously you're no exception. June, kind of similar question for you. I'm not going to ask you what you took away from your time in my lab, but when you were a postdoc in Juan Carlos' lab, what did you learn there?
First of all, I won't be here today without the great two mentors that I have, Martin Perrin and Juan Carlos Izpitsua Belmonte. And I learned from your lab. Thank you for introducing me into this wonderful world of proponent stem cells. And I think I learned from your lab is that the biology is the fundamental to all the stem cell work that we're doing today. I think I spent quite some time learning developmental biology because during my PhD study, I was not in the developmental biology field. I studied cancer cells instead. With Juan Carlos, and he taught me that I need to focus on, because we have a limited lifespan, I need to focus on the biggest question that I'm interested in my life. And even though it's difficult, but he encouraged me to think outside the box, always come up with different strategies, try to address that question. And also with Juan Carlos, I learned that you need to enrich your trainings from many different fields, in addition to stem cell, but also other relevant fields like gene editing and et cetera. And so from both mentors, you and Juan Carlos, I learned a lot, and this is which benefited me a lot during my startup, my own labs in UT Southwestern.
Thank you for your kind comments. Whatever we did something right because you're doing just fine. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you to our guests for sharing their stories with us today. This has been the Stem Cell Report. Thank you for listening.
Stem Cell Reports is ISSCR's open access peer-reviewed society journal for scientists by scientists. The journal publishes research and commentaries that drive the field of stem cell science forward.